Holy scientific.
When I hear a white coat talk about scientific, then I have this extraordinary tendency to want to reach for my revolver.
No offense intended. I'll see you all again at 6 o'clock then.
While the others rested, Mildred went out exploring during the middle of the afternoon with JB for company and protection. They returned about an hour later.
I had a peek at the cryology section, but it was totally destroyed. There was grass growing up through the floors. Same thing with the ruined wings we saw from the back of the trail. But the other wing is closed off to us. The guards said it was for experimenting and research. This one has two operating rooms on the first floor, along with what used to be a path lab and an X-ray department. Also a physio rehab unit at the far end, with double doors leading onto the gardens.
Security?
Thorough. Common weapon is a Mossberg, silvered 12-gauge. Original blasters, but beautifully kept. They'd be worth a fortune to a handful of frontier barons we all know of.
How many men?
Difficult to determine. Like Mildred says, we couldn't get access to the closed wing. Also, the atrium at the heart of the complex had sections that we were steered away from. They didn't like the idea of our going outside, either. If I had to make an informed guess from the one short and partial wreck, then I think I'd have to be looking around 100 mark. We saw about a dozen or so scientists as well.
Well-trained guards?
You saw them working out in the backcountry, Ryan. I really can't add to what we all thought then. Efficient, but not combat hard, is my guess. Like they know, in theory, what to do when faced with a firefight situation, but they've never actually done it.
That makes it easy.
Sure. Just about as easy as taking candy off a gorilla.
Ryan left Christy sleeping soundly in their room. Some of the color was seeping back into her cheeks. The horrific effect that using the Muti Gaia power had on her was so devastating that he couldn't face the idea of her using it ever again. There was the grim certainty at the back of his mind that the next time might be the last, that the force would ultimately be so overwhelming that it would rupture an artery in her brain, or more simply, burst her heart. He passed a series of closed and locked doors in a variety of colors, all with strange letter and number combination codes on them. A few bore their original pre-dark signs: nurse's restroom, orthodontics, do not enter when red light shows, TV room, absolutely no smoking, dietitian, blood bank, which had a small homemade label fixed beneath it, Dracula's castle. He passed a pair of patrolling guards, each with a Mossberg slung over the shoulder. He nodded to them, and they both grinned cheerfully. At the end of the wing, he passed through two sets of double doors, finding himself in the main atrium area that Mildred had mentioned. Here, the old signs had all gone. The walls were freshly painted and clean. The closed wings were self-evident, the wreckage visible through some obviously sealed sect doors. The other usable area, which had been barred to JB and Mildred, was the next one around the central core of the huge medical complex. It had no sign to give a clue as to what went on behind the guarded doors.
Can I help you, Outlander?
Ryan spun, seeing a sec man holding his gun. For a moment, Ryan thought the man was a stranger. Then he realized that it was the sec boss, Ellison, the one with the vicious scar by his mouth. The reason Ryan hadn't recognized him right away was that the man had shaved off his luxuriant mustache.
No, just stretching my legs, thanks.
What's your name?
You know my name, Ellison.
The man's eyes widened, and his finger moved on the trigger of his shotgun.
How the hell do you know my name, Outlander?
Ryan could see that there was something wrong, but couldn't for the life of him figure out what it was.
I know you because we spent hours together out in the park.
Park?
Acadia?
The muzzle of the Mossberg was now aimed, very definitely, at the pit of Ryan's stomach.
You say you and me spent hours together, Outlander?
Sure we did.
I say that you're some kind of sneaking liar. I never seen you before.
Why'd you shave off the mustache, Ellison? Get bored with it?
I never had a fucking mustache in my life. I never seen you before in my life, and you're about to find out what it's like to buy the farm.
Hold it, Ellison!
Ryan glanced over his shoulder. He'd been about to chop his hand at the barrel of the 12-gauge and take his chances, which he'd mentally put it around 100 to 1, when he spied the diminutive scientist, Buford.
Buford? I didn't think I'd be saying it, but I'm glad to see you.
The scientist pointed a trembling finger at the sec man.
Gun down, Ellison. That's an order. Do it, or you'll be cleaning out the freak cages for the rest of your life.
He said he knew me, the Outlander.
Of course I know him. He was with you the whole time, Buford. I just asked him why he'd shaved off his mustache.
I never had him.
No more talking, Ellison.
Buford reached across and actually laid his hand across the sick man's mouth.
Let it lie. I'll just go back and join the others. It doesn't matter.
It was his brother who accompanied us into the forest in our pursuit of the animals that had escaped from our laboratory.
Brother?
Yes, his twin brother.
Buford took his hand away from the sec guard's face.
Carry on, Patrol Ellison. I shall speak with you at a later time.
The man marched off, the Mossberg slung once more across his broad back. His whole posture was one of frustrated rage.
There. No problem too small and no solution too large. That's what we say here at Crichton. We'll meet at 6. Everyone is so very excited about it. Christy won't be able to... No, she won't be able to... Of course, no, it's too early. But perhaps tomorrow.
Perhaps.
On his way back toward the rooms they all shared, Ryan wondered about the Ellison brothers. One with a mustache and one without. And both of them with a precisely identical scar. David Crichton was 83 years old, or 83 years young, as he sometimes declared himself. He sat at the head of the table in the Institute cafeteria with his senior staff ranged on either side, alternating with Ryan and his friends. Only Christy and Dean were absent. Dean had volunteered to stay in the room and keep Christy company. Ryan had been glad to accept the offer.
It was my dear departed grandmother, Melissa Crichton, who was responsible for the founding and a deal of the funding. Just my little joke. Many of my colleagues have heard it, I fear, many times in the past 60 years or more. So difficult to calculate the passing of time as one slips into the 8th decade of life.
I would be the first to drink to that, Professor Crichton.
Doc lifted his cut crystal goblet of elderflower wine. The food was terrible, a surprisingly large proportion of it recycled and artificial. Ryan found himself sitting between Crichton and Ladro Buford.
I noticed our courses seemed to lack fresh meat or vegetables.
Oh, no need for it. We can process much of what we require. It prevents any necessity for us to go outside the valley more than 3 or 4 times a year. Then we mount a large-scale expedition to stock up. Then we dry, pulp, freeze, and retexture the food to last us another 3-4 months. Tasty, is it not?
Tasty isn't the word I would have chosen.
There were printed menus spaced along the table, and the food, already in individual portions on rectangular green plastic dishes, was served by unarmed sec men. Soup of the day turned out to be a pale green liquid that matched the bowls and had a faint taste of dried peas and too much salt. The fish pâté was a pinkish-gray color with a watery constitution. The salad was a single irradiated tomato and 3 shredded leaves of reconstituted lettuce that had neither flavor nor texture. The main course was meat and 3 vegetables.
What kind of meat is this?
I believe it was once pork. Or beef. I'll send a message to the kitchen to find out.
Oh, don't bother. I guess it's still going to taste like absolutely nothing, even when I know that it's really something.
The vegetables were 3 dollops of mush, precisely the same size for everyone. Buford pointed out proudly that the machines in the kitchens were accurate to 1/8 of a milligram in doling it out. 1 dollop was pale yellow, 1 was off-white, and 1 was dark green. The desserts were a straight choice between cheese or fruit cobbler. The cobbler looked like crimson mush, reduced to the texture of watery porridge.
This cheese is the genuine article.
The cheese keeps well. In fact, we've not yet found a way, after all these years, to successfully deconstruct and then reconstitute it.
Well, I guess that's one thing for us all to be grateful for.
The conversation was stilted. The men and women in their lab coats seemed to have little idea of the world beyond the rocky walls of the valley that held the Institute at its center, like a powerful oyster gripping a pearl. They asked a little about the fishing village that Ryan and the others had claimed to come from, but the inquiries were desultory and didn't show true interest. The one subject that undoubtedly did interest them all was Christy Roth.
We are